Blog Talk Radio.
Break them.
Start of the 2015 Major League season, and just like Ice Cube, indeed, today is a very good day. More importantly, actually, today is a very good weekend for all those seam heads or even non-seam heads fringe baseball fans that are waiting for the start of the regular season to start. I know a lot of people are hyped up about the 2015 Seattle Mariners. I know, Bo, down in the DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth area, I know a lot of people are very excited for the Texas Rangers, especially after the absolute disaster season that happened last year in 2014. So welcome in, the Power Alley. Bo Reed along with Steve Silver. Very good show lined up for you today. As a matter of fact, we're talking a little injuries. We're going to get you all caught up on the news and notes. We're also going to talk to you a little bit about Chris Bryant, the whiny, sniveling little bitch of the Chicago Cubs. That's right, I said it. The SEC doesn't contain me. We'll talk about it. I'm a little upset by Chris Bryant, so we're going to talk about that today. We're
all a lot upset.
Listen, you're not even a rookie, okay?
Yeah.
You're not even a rookie. You don't even deserve the opportunity to voice your displeasure, okay? You keep your mouth shut. You take your assignment, because guess what? You'll be up within the span of 3 weeks. I'm sorry. Keep your mouth shut. We're also going to talk a little bit about Josh Hamilton today. As a matter of fact, say what you will about the independent arbitrator that ruled in favor of Josh Hamilton. Bo, as you know, I don't get how somebody does cocaine, tests positive for taking cocaine, does not get suspended on the joint drug testing protocol. I don't understand how that doesn't show up as a fail, or if it did show up a fail, why they even got into why it doesn't count against the joint drug testing policy. We'll get into that as well too. We'll also talk about the Angels, who should be very embarrassed by the way that they handled this. So we'll get into that as well too. But Bo, it is the start of the regular season, and I love to feel nostalgia. To me, opening day is the greatest thing in sports. Granted, we're right in the middle of the NCAA Final Four. I know a lot of people love the Final Four. To me, it doesn't hold the same thing as it was back in the late 80s and early 90s, back in the heyday of college basketball when you had those really good UNLV teams, those very good Christian Leitner-led Duke teams, the Fab Five that went to the championship game, those teams that were around for two or three seasons where you actually had those built-up college rivalries where it actually means something. Now it just seems like it's completely watered down. Of course, Gino Auriemma comes out and says that the entire thing is a complete sham. It's completely watered down. So there's that. Of course, NFL opening day doesn't really mean anything to me as well, too, because, I mean, by the time you get through the overhyped preseason, by the time opening day comes around the NFL, it's completely just – it's nothing to me. Of course, the same thing with the National Hockey League. And no offense to the NFL fans or NHL fans, there is nothing like opening day of Major League Baseball. It is everything. It's almost like college football, though. You have the pageantry of just what it's like to come back after a long winter. You had the hot stove. You had all this built up anticipation. You go through spring training, and all of a sudden, boom, it's opening day. Most ballparks around the country are always going to be sold out for opening day because, they roll out the red carpets, all the pageantry, all the festivities, and we're finally here, Bo. So I want to know your favorite opening day moment or just your favorite all-time baseball moment that actually happened to you.
Well, I mean, as you know, we've both been to our share of opening days. Okay, I would love to not miss one, but now the Rangers are actually good, so now they have this lottery system.
And you're in Baltimore?
Well, that too. But, there was a stretch there where getting Rangers tickets to opening day was hard, but not impossible. Now it's impossible. But going back, and this is how long ago this was, guess who started this particular opener for the Rangers, Steve?
Go ahead.
A guy named John Burkett.
Oh, yeah, John Burkett. Yeah, of course, man.
Way back in the day. And I remember this because this is when I learned that very valuable lesson about you don't talk about a certain thing while it's going on.
Yeah.
John Burkett had a perfect game through five against the White Sox. And I just casually turned to my dad. I'm like, hey, Burkett over here is a little bit perfect right now. Next inning, the White Sox scored six runs. The Rangers got the living crap beat out of them. So I learned a very valuable lesson that day. It's that one memory that just stays with you.
I remember John Burkett, not with the Rangers so much as he was with the Braves. And I remember one year John Burkett was an afterthought. Signs a one-year deal with the Braves. I know this is completely off topic, but he had like an all-star season with the Braves, and he was never the same after that. It was basically one last hurrah for John Burkett. I felt good for him at the time, but whatever. Anyway, for me, it's not necessarily an opening day memory, as it is just the baseball memory that I will never forget. And it happened on May 27th, 1992. And the reason why I remember this is because it was literally my first baseball game. And it was a day game in the Kingdom, the old Kingdom. And my dad came and got me out of school because I think it was like a 12:05 start. It was the Mariners versus the Orioles, and I remember it like it was yesterday. It was Eric Hanson throwing for the Mariners versus Ben McDonald of the Baltimore Orioles. And, you know, what's kind of funny is a lot of people are nostalgic about the first time they actually go to the ballpark. And you hear, you know, all the old-timers talk about the first time they went to Yankee Stadium, the old Yankee Stadium, before it was even renovated in 72. You know, going to see Mickey Mantle for the first time or Joe DiMaggio, whatever the case may be. But to me, walking into the old Kingdom, as gross as the Kingdom was, and it was literally like a cement coffin, you know, when you walk through the tunnel for the first time and you see the ball field, it really is like stepping into Yankee Stadium or, you know, Fenway Park or Tiger Stadium, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And I was with my dad, and I remember thinking this is the coolest experience I think I've ever did. And you have to remember something. In the early 90s, Ken Griffey Jr. was an idol figure, Seattle's first major superstar. He was an idol figure for a lot of kids and a lot of 11-year-old boys like myself at the time. And I remember this being the first time that I got to see my boyhood idol. And I remember specifically in the bottom of the third inning, runners on second and third, and Ken Griffey Jr. is at the plate. I think the count is like 1-1 or 2-2. I think it's maybe 2-2. And Ben McDonald served him that typical Ben McDonald overhand curve, and Ken Griffey Jr. crushed it. I mean, we're talking he crushed it into the upper deck, pulled into the right field upper deck. And the thing about this is I remember standing up and seeing this ball arc into the upper deck. And you know what? To me, that is the greatest baseball memory I have, not because it was my first game and I got to enjoy it with my father, because my boyhood hero hit a home run on my day.
Right.
And I will always remember that. And to me, every single time opening day comes around, I always think about that special day. It's just because, you know, baseball, for you guys like you and me and everybody that's tuning in, baseball is that special something that it was passed down between father and father, generation to generation. I think that gets a little bit lost now because we are in the overbloated offensive generation of, you know, 24/7 sports information or whatever. Everybody loves offense. Nobody can appreciate just the art of baseball. But, you know, these are the type of things that baseball, you know, things that have been handed off from generation, you're always going to remember it, and you hope that you can pass along to your own. But that being said, Bo, to me, that is my favorite baseball memory.
That's a pretty good one.
That's a great memory.
It's a great memory. And that's the thing about baseball. You know, there's a reason why it's America's pastime. I mean,
right.
it evokes memories of you as a kid with your father playing catch, going to your first game, seeing what you'd watched on TV but live. And that's the thing. And you know, fans today, I mean, I love it that we get to watch every single game, whether in my position watching on MLB TV or the fact that, you know, all these regional networks. But when we were kids, unless you lived in the city that they played in, you didn't get them.
Right.
I grew up listening to the games on the radio.
I mean, there's a lot of things that that are detractors of the game of baseball. A lot of people think the game is boring, but for guys like you and me that basically wait all year for this day, there's just nothing better than this. But Bo, let's shift gears and let's get into the bulk of the show. And we're going to start off with news and notes from around the league. We will start off in Detroit, where Justin Verlander starts the season on the 15-day DL retroactive. So it looks like he's probably going to be missing, I think, the first 5 or 6 days of the season. So basically, he's going to miss the first start, his first scheduled start, recovering from, obviously, the core,
right,
the core issue. Brad Ausmus, the manager of the Tigers, says he feels good, feels extremely good throwing. Is this a little cause for concern, or is this basically, you know, much to do about nothing? Are you going to take what Brad Ausmus is saying, or do you think that maybe this is you can actually, you know, be a little apprehensive about this?
I don't think there's any reason to be apprehensive. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to be apprehensive about the Tigers. I don't think Verlander is one of them. I mean, granted, he had a down year by his standards last year, but in terms of health, he's missing one start.
Right.
And if you think about it, it's really a delayed first start. He's going to miss one turn through the rotation. That's not a big deal for Detroit, especially because you have David Price at the top of that rotation. Verlander in the rotation doesn't fix the rotation issues in the back end of that rotation, doesn't fix the bullpen. He can't pitch 9 innings every single night. They've got a lot more issues to worry about. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Now they're listing this. They're listing this as a mild triceps strain. Now, of course, we heard this earlier in the season with earlier in the spring training with Yu Darvish. That ends up being Tommy John. I still think that, granted, I don't understand they're saying this is a mild tricep strain, but a part of me thinks this still has a lot to do with the core issue that he was dealing with all last year. Now, granted, everybody's saying there's nothing wrong with this. This is strictly just a triceps injury, but I gotta be honest with you, man. For me, this is cause for concern because, again, the one thing that we've highlighted on the show over the last couple of weeks is, like, number one, Detroit doesn't really have that great of a back end of a rotation, and their bullpen not exactly impressive. And so now you end up losing this. The one thing that I hope for, especially for the Tigers' sake, is that this is exactly what they're classifying this as. He comes back, makes his first start, and this ends up much to do about nothing. But as we know, sometimes these things tend to linger, though.
Yeah. I mean, they linger a little bit, but I'm sure that, you know, they've done their due diligence, they've done the MRIs, they've done everything they have to do. I'm sure he's fine. You know, he's just not going to be ready Monday. He's going to be ready Friday.
Yeah.
Not a big deal.
Oh, fair enough. Other news, the Oakland A's lose Coco Crisp, arthroscopic procedure. They lose him for what's estimated to be 2 months, if not longer. Bo, this is actually a very big deal. To me, the Oakland A's, I've always thought the Oakland A's never really were rebuilding. I didn't really think they were retooling. I think they were just reshaping, getting a little bit better defensively up the middle from last year. Now, granted, okay, here's the thing. Coco Crisp, I mean, he is what he is offensively. Most of his value comes from, you know, from defense and speed. And now you end up losing basically one of the biggest cogs from your middle, from up the middle defense. And you lose him for 2 months. Now it's projected Sam Fold takes over, and you know there's always this old adage when it comes to baseball: one guy can never shape the what your season is going to be like. But this is again one of the key guys of the Oakland A's that could not afford to lose, especially defensively and all the value. And now all of a sudden the Oakland A's look incredibly pedestrian in the outfield defensively, and of course their up the middle defense took a huge hit. And as you know, up the middle defense is the backbone of any successful team. Now when you add that to AJ Griffin and Jared Parker, those two guys are going to be coming back from Tommy John, and now you throw Coco Crisp onto the scrap heap as far as injury goes with the A's. Now all of a sudden the A's look absolutely pedestrian. And I think you and I were talking about this, and when we're starting to look in the confines of the AL West, I'm sorry, I got to take the Oakland A's down a notch because of this injury.
Yeah.
So far as to think, you know what, maybe I'm a little bit more comfortable taking your question mark Texas Rangers as the second team in this division.
Well, I would agree with that. You know, and it's not just defense. I mean, you're also talking about the spark at the top of that offense. It's going to miss the first, 2 months of the season? Not to mention, it's a lineup that's a lot younger than it was last year. You know, they traded away, they traded away Moss, they traded away Donaldson. You know, they traded away all these guys out of the lineup. They needed that veteran presence, especially at the top, especially providing what Coco Crisp provides. Because, let's be honest, Billy Butler may be a veteran, but he's not the Billy Butler from 2 or 3 years ago that can actually anchor the middle of an order anymore. Now they've lost the top of they've got a key piece to the top of that order, and they've got nothing but kids in that lineup now.
Right.
That to me is the bigger issue. I mean, I understand what you're saying on defense. Defense is very important.
Very important.
But when you're talking about an Oakland A's offense that already struggles to score runs, now you've taken away their lightning rod off the top.
Right.
The veteran presence from that order. You're going to rely on a lot of kids that are very good players. Don't get me wrong. I think this is an Oakland A's team that didn't necessarily rebuild or whatnot, but they certainly retooled and reshaped their roster the way Billy Bean always does. How many times have we seen this, Steve? They'll go on a run where they win the West for, you know, 2 or 3 years. Then they trade everybody because they're starting to hit those numbers in arbitration that the A's can't afford. But they always do good deals, and they come back a year later, 2 years later, and they're that thorn in everyone's side again. I think that's what they're doing here. They could not lose Coco Crisp for this amount of time, and they were already on the fringe when this happened.
Now what they're saying
this season, now 2016, that's a whole different ballgame.
What they're saying is the surgery was successful. Okay, everybody says that after in the surgery, they're going to get him on a rehab quick. They're going to fast track the rehab to get him quick back sooner or later. They think that this was just as minor as you can for an arthroscopic procedure. So hopefully, you know, maybe they're not going to have there. Maybe, you know, maybe they might, you know, dodge a bullet and they'll get them back sooner rather than later. And let's hope if you're an Oakland A's fan that they're going to end up doing that, because I don't think you can be out the first 2 months of the season without Coco Crisp.
No.
turning our attention now to the New York Yankees, Masahiro Tanaka has came out and said that he expects to pitch at a velocity that is a little lower than what he expects it to be. I think this is the biggest does statement I think you can make because I think we all remember last year that he elected not to have the Tommy John surgery on his partially torn UCL. So granted, he went through the PT, he rehabbed, and so I'm sure that entire joint is strong. But guess what, Bo? And as I know personally, tears stay torn.
Yeah.
These things happen to stay torn, and unfortunately, of course you're not going to be able to pitch on lower speeds. I'll even take it the next step further, and he's probably not going to have a ton of bite on his cutters. I don't think his slider is going to have complete bite. I think this is going to be a situation where, you know what, and when you look at the New York Yankees and there's two people that cannot be ineffective or be lost to injury, which is one of them is, of course, Masahiro Tanaka, and the other one being Michael Pineda, This is exactly what you do not want to hear from Masahiro Tanaka, because you know what's going to happen? It's going to leave other lineups chomping at the bit to face him, because if he's not sharp and if he doesn't have that bite on his off-speed stuff, or he doesn't have that movement on his fastball because he's throwing at a lower speed because his elbow kind of hurts, this is bad news for the New York Yankees.
That's terrible news for the Yankees. You know, and, of course, the Yankees are brushing it off like the Yankees do. Forget exactly what their quote was on the lines that we're not worried about his arm. Well, you should be. It absolutely should be. I mean, let's be honest. A ligament is not a muscle. It doesn't heal itself. The only way to fix a partially torn, slightly torn, or completely torn ligament is what? Ligament reconstruction surgery. It's the only way. Because ligaments do not heal. They just don't. You might be able to get to a point where you can pitch through it, but your velocity is going to be down. So it was. It was a duh statement. And the Yankees are in a little bit of trouble because, I mean, let's be honest. Pineda doesn't exactly have the best track record for health, and his is a shoulder.
In other injury news, Bo, the Reds also placed Homer Bailey on the injury on the DL to start the season. I think that's also retroactive as well too. It's going to be interesting to see how that rotation stretches out. I think it's also, you know, the Reds are also in a situation where they can't, you know, afford to lose Bailey. He's actually one of those big cogs in that rotation as well, too. I think you and I don't really have Cincinnati necessarily being, you know, serious contenders necessarily for the NL Central. But, you know, Jay Bruce and Joey Votto are able to do what they're capable of doing, and Billy Hamilton is exactly what he is, and if they can get solid pitching, maybe the Reds can have an outside chance to be a dark horse for one of those wild card spots. But, again, losing a guy like Homer Bailey to start the season, Bo, kind of a big blow.
It's a big blow. I mean, the Reds were already challenged in that division to begin with, and I don't know the injury to Homer Bailey. I don't know. I don't know how long he's going to be out, but you know, it was already going to be tough for them. And now you're talking about losing your guy in the rotation.
So here is exactly what it is, and of course the corresponding move. They also sent Sam LaCour to the minors in one of their final moves. Here's the dirty dish on Homer Bailey. It looks like he's going to start the season on the DL, and I believe it's looking like he's going to be able to rejoin the rotation in mid-April. And I think what they're saying is he's still trying to make his way back from his flexor tendon surgery. So there's a little setback from that. It's not anything what they say is it's not necessarily anything serious, but it's just a little inflammation due to making his way back from the September flexor tendon surgery. So yeah. That is something that is always worth to keep your eye on because, again, these are the type of injuries that, you know, pitchers can't necessarily afford. And then, granted, last season, by the way, was the first year of his $105 million contract extension with the Reds. So, obviously, the Reds are paying him a boatload of money to be out there. He can't stay healthy. So, hopefully, he'll suffer no more setbacks, and he'll be able to join that rotation in mid-April. The other injury news is also Zach Wheeler of the New York Mets. This is a New York Mets team who a lot of people think might challenge for a wild card. As a matter of fact, a lot of people have them as a wild card team based on the strength of the rotation and their bullpen. I'm not a big fan of the Mets offense. I got to be honest with you. I actually don't like the Mets offense at all. But I do like their pitching staff. But then again, you get Matt Harvey back from Tommy John, and then boom, you lose Zach Wheeler to Tommy John. So how big of a blow? How big of a blow is this?
It's a pretty big blow. I mean, they were already challenged. I mean, as we've talked about, I mean, they were already challenged. I've liked their rotation going into the season, even without Zach Wheeler. But
kind of a fan of Jacob DeGrom. I think he's pretty solid, but
yeah, I like him. I like Dylan. I like them all, but yeah. You know, at the same time, you know, they have no offense. The bullpen's okay, but I wouldn't call it lights out bullpen. So I mean, you're talking about with that offense, they're going to have to pitch a lot of low scoring games. Zach Wheeler is a guy that has that capability, not just to keep the score down, but to go 7-8 innings every start. And you know, we talked a little bit about this earlier. This is a complete tear.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember the last time I heard of a complete tear in the elbow for a pitcher.
What's kind of crazy about it is, think about this way. Right now, the Mets have four pitchers right now that are starting the season on the DL. Three of which are recovering from Tommy John surgery. Two of which just had Tommy John surgery. One of them being Josh Edgen. The other one being Zach Wheeler. Bobby Purnell is coming back from Tommy John. Vic Black, of course, has got the shoulder tendonitis. So who knows exactly if that's just much to do about nothing. But as of right now, Bartolo Colon is the ace. What's kind of funny is the ace of that staff. Think about that. Jacob DeGrom, he's going to open. He's going to start opening day. Then you got Jacob DeGrom. Matt Harvey is now slated as three as he's working his way back from Tommy John. Of course, John Neese and Dylan G. The Mets rotation, even losing Matt Harvey, is still going to be pretty good. Zach Wheeler. But I'll tell you what, man. I looked at Wheeler as being a very good number two. I think it goes
mm-hmm.
without saying.
I agree with that.
I think it goes without saying is you can't really afford to lose those type of dudes.
No, you can't.
Could he have developed into a guy that had ace-like stuff? Of course he could have. But right now he is a very good number two, and he was better than a swing guy. But he was one of those guys where you could stack up next to Matt Harvey, Bartolo Colon, and Jacob DeGrom, and you had yourself a quattro of pitchers where every single time you go out, you have an opportunity to win. To me, this is kind of a big blow. I'm not saying that John Neese or Dylan G can't get it done. I'm sure they can. But Zach Wheeler was a guy who was starting to make a very good name for himself, and all of a sudden, boom, there it is.
You know, it's kind of weird, because we see all these Tommy Johns, right? We see, and we're talking about pitchers that are in great shape, and then you've got Captain All-You-Can-Eat Buffet, perfectly fine. Perfectly fine, going to start opening day.
Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing to me.
The guy who is overweight, doesn't take care of himself, and yet never really had a major injury. And then the guys who take extreme care, and you know what it is? It's just an issue of mechanics. Some guys' mechanics are just naturally sound.
Yeah.
Right? It basically comes down to your God-given ability just to be able to throw baseball.
It could also be that Bartolo Colon's probably never lifted weights a day in his life, and these kids have a training regimen where they're actually lifting weights on top of throwing. Could be that, too. But it's still weird to me. You've got this guy that's as big as the mound he's pitching on, perfectly fine, and these fine-tuned athletes have to have elbow surgeries left and right. It boggles my imagination. It really does.
Let's get to some better news, Bo. As much as I want to sit here and talk about, you know, people's, you know, UCL snapping and, you know, and labrums tearing and all
that. A complete tear, man.
Yeah.
Goodness.
Well, you know, these things tend to happen. Anyways, when it happened a while ago. As a matter of fact, it happened over a decade ago. But that's the whole thing with these things. If you don't properly take care of them, you know, tears stay tears, and you can be doing something as simple as doing hammer curls into a shoulder press and end up inadvertently re-aggravating something that, you know, causes you a lot of pain. Anyway, I digress. Better news. Again, we can talk about labrums and UCL is all we want, but I think it's time to, you know, get into some good news here. The Mariners, Bo, this might be good news for you. Maybe you were hoping that this was going to happen. Sure enough, it did. Lloyd McClendon comes out today and says that Taijuan Walker actually is going to be the fourth starter, not the fifth starter. So they're going to break up that 1-2 punch of Taijuan Walker, Felix Hernandez. So if you were coming into a series and you had that fifth starter going Walker, Hernandez, Paxton, you have now actually dodged the bullet, and now it potentially could be Hap. You're going to go lefty, righty, lefty, so you basically dodge this bullet. But this is actually kind of a good news because they actually believe so much in Taijuan Walker that they're willing to put him in that rotation of four. But also, this is also a move for potentially Felix Hernandez because you can actually end up, you know, potentially moving off a Walker, especially how the day shift where you can actually end up pushing that off, and then you get to Hap, and then you get to Felix. So you actually might end up giving Felix an extra day of rest. And this is by design because, again, contrary to what a lot of people didn't even pay attention to last year, but Felix Strand has pitched his best September in a very long time. And everybody inside the organization basically said it's because they were able to take those innings that he didn't pitch early in the season and piggyback on them in September, and he was able to last deep into September, which is something that we really haven't seen a lot from King Felix. Basically, over the last six innings, as great as he has really been, and he's a Cy Young Award winner, there was a lot of innings workload on his back over the last couple of years, and sometimes I wouldn't say he had a complete fade in September's past, but it wasn't a solid September, except for last year when Wade McClendon and staff basically said, okay, well, what if we limit his innings in the first five starts? Maybe we can skip the fourth guy and push him back an extra day, and that way, you know, Felix, you know, we can put all those innings, put him on the back end. Maybe he can be healthy for September, be fresh for September. Sure enough, he was. So this is, don't get me wrong, it's good. It's good for Taijuan Walker because he's going to be put in that quattro, but it's also very strategic because there's going to be times where you might be able to skip him, pushing Felix back an extra day. And yeah, of course you have J.A. Happ and all that's good. But for the most part, this is designed for Felix Hernandez mainly, but it's also good for Taijuan Walker because again, he had a phenomenal spring. I think he probably had one of the better springs of any young pitchers in the Cactus League.
Right, which, I mean, when you look at pitchers in the Cactus League, that's something you can actually say, okay, his spring performance really was a wow. You know, hitters, it's thin air. You know, you never really know if it's the Arizona air or if they're actually a good hitter. Pitchers, on the other hand, having a spring like he had, it's eye-opening. It was dominant.
And yeah. I don't take anything from spring training because it's just exactly that. It's spring training. A lot of things, a lot of people are working on different things, except for young guys like Taijuan Walker who are out there with the mentality of I'm making the club. That's it. That's
also
his entire map.
Yep.
It's a different perspective, and he goes out there pitching like it's the seventh game of the World Series every single time out because it means much more to him. That's exactly what he did this spring, and he was the best starter in all spring of all the guys. That's Felix Hernandez, that's Iwakuma, that's James Paxton. Those three guys who are really good pitchers, Taijuan Walker was better than them, and he was dealing. So this is a very good thing.
Yeah. You're actually seeing a lot of teams start to kind of go in this direction where you're not going to have a true six-man rotation, but they're going to use their AAA depth. They're going to use the spot start to give guys that extra day when they can.
Yep.
Because, I mean, you're right. I mean, the problem is, unless you're used to pitching into September and October, like, you know, pitchers from our past obviously were, you are going to get a little gassed in September.
Yep. And, you know, it's no coincidence that because of what they did last season, and this is something that they did last season, they were able to use some of those innings that they didn't use in the first half and the last half. It worked out beautifully. You know, the problem with keeping Walker in the fifth spot is there's going to be a potential where he might actually end up pitching more than actually J.A. Happ if it was in the fourth spot. So you do that, and this is all strategic. So, you know, this is a good move for the Mariners. But, yeah, no doubt about it. So the other – piece of good news is Corey Kluber. Corey Kluber and the Cleveland Indians are talking on an extension, which is actually much needed for the reigning American League Cy Young Award winner. Last time I checked, I think Kluber's like 31. I think he got a late start, had an absolutely monster season last year. Of course, he's like I think he's only the second or third year, not necessarily even arbitration eligible. Got a little bit of a raise this year just because, you know, the average salary went up. I think it was like 8%. So he got a raise. I think it's like $600,000. Still an absolute bargain for the Cleveland Indians considering just how good he was. But, of course, he's 31 years old, and the dude obviously deserves to get paid. So I'm glad to see the Cleveland Indians are actually not only looking at Corey Kluber, but also Carlos Carrasco. Sorry. So, yeah, they're working on both guys who are most deserving of contract extensions. But I guess the question is exactly what if you're the Indians, what is exactly the right amount of contract extension? I know they're talking multi-year deal. Is this something where you're going to give them just like what the Royals just gave, Yordano Ventura? I mean, I would probably think that at this point in time, considering he is an established ace with a Cy Young, you probably think that $20 million guaranteed.
Actually, not going to get it done.
Right, but you would think that would actually fit Kluber more than it actually would for Ventura, right?
Yes. I mean, Ventura was very impressive last year, which this Ventura deal really is a little surprising. I think it's a year early by the Royals.
Yeah, but Kluber won the Cy Young.
But Kluber did win the Cy Young, which is why I don't think $20 million is going to get it done. You talk about a Cy Young winning pitcher.
But this is also an organization that has no – it doesn't even have an – that's the whole thing, is they don't even have to extend him because he's under their own, he is under their own control, not even arbitration eligible yet. And that's what's kind of funny about this. They don't have any reason to extend him except for just for the goodness of their heart. So you would think that this would be something that, okay, well, yeah, of course, definitely you are definitely worth more than what you're being paid. But then again, I mean, okay, you're what, 31?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to give you a 6-year deal. We're not going to give you a 5-year deal. We're probably thinking like a 3-year deal, a multi-year deal, you know, maybe, you know, 11, mm-hmm. maybe you can get them cheap on the first year and then give them like $8 million in the second year and $11 million in the third, something like that.
Maybe.
I mean, he's making only 600,000.
Yeah, here's the problem.
He's 29, sorry.
Yeah, and he's got a Cy Young under his belt. Right now, both him and his agent are looking at the winter meetings and however long it takes for him to hit free agency where they're going to make $150, $160 million. So I don't see $20 million getting it done. I don't see them actually being able to work out something. They might be able to do something to cover his arbitration years, maybe 1 or 2 years of free agency. After that, no, that's not happening.
I don't know, man.
It's just the game we have now.
What's kind of funny is Carrasco's 28, and he avoided arbitration with a one-year $2.3 million deal during the offseason. He's got club control through 2017, but yet what's kind of funny about this is, you know what, Carrasco, who's not even in the same ballpark as Kluwer, is making $2.3. This dude's only making $600,000. I would probably say that the going rate for a dude like Kluwer, even if you're not going to give him over $10 million, you think the going rate would probably be right around the $8 million range for a guy like Kluwer, which would be a significant upgrade from what he's making. But I tend to think you're right. But then again, I mean, I don't know. Also, we mentioned during this little hit that yes, the Royals did agree to terms on a 5-year deal for Yordano Ventura, a deal that's worth north than $20 million. And, Bo, this has nothing to do with Yordano Ventura. I think he's fine. To me, this is all about the Royals' inability to keep the status quo or even try to keep the status quo after winning the American League Championship last year.
Yeah.
Most teams that do that put themselves in a position where they troubleshoot exactly how many people are going to be expected to come to the ballpark after that type of season. And then from then, they're able to figure out a number as far as their player payroll commitments. And usually that number goes up, I don't know, somewhere around like 22-23%. It's a massive increase where they could actually raise their ceiling up and give them a little bit more flexibility in order to either retain or go out there and try to improve their ball club. And the Kansas City Royals did absolutely none of that. Okay, they did absolutely none of that. If you consider Kendrys Morales and Alex Rios upgrades, okay, that's fine. But they did not re-sign Billy Butler, and they most certainly did not re-sign Big Game Shields. And to me, this is an absolute travesty under the rules of the collecting and bargaining agreement that allows cheap owners to be completely cheap. And the Kansas City Royals, make no mistake, they have one of the cheapest ownerships in Major League Baseball. And to me, this contract gets me upset because you're willing to go above north for $20 million guaranteed on a 5-year deal to a guy like Yordano Ventura, who, by the way, they didn't even eat up any of his free agent years. This basically eats up whatever's left of his arbitration years, which is fine because it gives them nice little value for him. But if you're going to give guaranteed money to Ventura, who's not an ace, and you're not even going to make at least an offer to James Shields, that is to me, that is disrespectful to fans of baseball who understand, who are smart. To me, it absolutely drove me crazy. And this has nothing to do with Yordano Ventura. This has more to do with the cheap ownership of the Kansas City Royals.
Well, I mean, the Royals ownership has, you know, they routinely pocket revenue sharing money. Let's be honest. They routinely pocket it instead of putting it back into the team. The only reason why the Royals were able to do what they did last year is because they developed a really good young team. This wasn't free agent signings. This wasn't going out and spending money on a team. This is taking advantage of baseball's arbitration process.
Right.
And I agree. It's normally when you do a deal like this with a young player, usually it's after year two at least, if not year three, and you, as a team, you say, okay, we're going to give you more money than you're going to make in arbitration. In exchange, we want a couple of years of free agency with us, right? You know, we want to go. We're going to take this. We're going to go 2 years beyond your arbitration years, and then you can hit free agency if we don't come to an agreement before then.
Okay, great.
That didn't happen this time.
Right. I mean, okay, great. Good for you, Donna Ventura. They're banking on the guy potentially being what they expect him to be. But you had a guy who was actually who you thought he was.
Mm-hmm.
And now, granted, that's fine. He gets paid from San Diego, a very aggressive San Diego. And if he ends up leaving anyways, okay, fine. But at least make an offer. At least say, hey, you know what? We're serious about keeping you. We're not asking you to take a discount, but here's our offer. We think it's aggressive. If you choose to go somewhere else, okay, that's fine. You can turn us mm-hmm. down. But at least make an offer. They didn't even do that. They basically said, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give this. We're going to factor in a potential extension for him at the time, but we're going to fill our holes. We're not going to re-sign Billy Butler, who, by the way, did not really sign that big of a contract. We're not going to re-sign Nori Aoki, who, by the way, did not sign that big of a contract with the Giants.
Not at all. No.
And we're going to bring in two underachieving guys from last year, Kendrys Morales and Alex Reyes, and hoping to get either milk whatever's left of them or hope for a bounce back. And we're going to put him in a lineup that had guys who had very good years, who outside of Alex Gordon, I don't think are going to be as good as they were. There's going to be some regression. And now this to me, the Royals completely dropped the offseason ball. And this deal highlights exactly what I have felt about the Royals, that they are absolutely mm-hmm. a fluke, cheapskate organization. I'm saying it. I don't care anymore.
Hey,
they were
great
last year. But you know what? They are exactly who I thought they were.
I absolutely agree with you. You know, I think, frankly, you know, you look at last year, I mean, you had the O's and the Royals in the American League Championship Series because the entire league was down. Let's be honest about
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay? I mean, come on. The Orioles and Royals in the ALCS and the Royals just steamrolled the Orioles? Okay. I don't know who set the video game settings on last season, but the American League was completely out of whack.
The settings on the American League, that was pretty good. The settings on the American League, that was pretty good.
Yeah, completely out of whack. But, you know, I think if you look at I'm okay with them letting Shields walk because they were not going to be in on that anyway. I mean, even if they did spend money on their team the way that they should, they still wouldn't have the money for James Shields. Okay, let's be honest about that. Now, that being said, they could have, if you look at the deals that Butler got and Aoki got, they could have brought back everyone else.
True.
And then you're talking about, hey, we're still fielding the same team. We're still doing it again. You just need somebody to replace Shields, which was a gettable on the market. There were guys that they could have gotten that, you know, innings eaters, veterans, that could have given them just enough to be back in the hunt this year. But when you lose Shields and you don't bring back Butler, you don't bring back Aoki, you replace them with guys who have been suspect at best. What do you expect?
This is the crazy thing, okay? So you don't bring Butler and you bring in Rios and Morales. Okay, fine. You don't bring Shields
right.
and you bring in Edinson Volquez. Edinson Volquez? Edinson Volquez? Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Okay.
Volquez.
Whatever.
Well aware. Yeah.
Okay.
That's how we got Josh Hamilton.
This is your answer to Chicago.
Right.
This is your answer to Cleveland. Two teams that are
yeah.
clearly better than you. Now, I know you had a very good last two seasons that led up to that crescendo last year, but this is your answer? A joke, Bo. A joke. This is a
mm-hmm.
joke. And this is no disrespect to Kendrys Morales, Alex Rios, and Edinson Volquez.
You like a kid, Kendrys Morales. I know.
No, you know what's kind of, it has nothing to do with last season with Morales. It's the fact that, you know what, he banked on himself and lost. Goes to Minnesota, has a good first week, and then is completely disappears off the face of the earth. He pulled an Ali Sheedy, okay? I know.
Yeah.
By the way, that joke is still money. I don't care what anybody says. That joke is still money. But, okay. And now you're going to Kansas City, and I guess it profiles well to him, but again, the pitchers are going to have an advantage on them, and Alex Rios is 34. Whatever's left that they have, you're expecting to milk whatever's left out of Alex Rios, and you're trying to hope for a bounce back of Kendrys Morales. Do you realize that bounce back seasons rarely happen? I mean, they do, and then they don't. I don't expect much from Morales, and if anything should happen, I'm sure that's going to be considered for gravy. But then again, the Royals are banking on it, and they're going to get let down. You get exactly
mm-hmm.
what you pay for. This is basically what it comes to. This whole crescendo is the Royals are get exactly what they pay for. Not only are they not making the playoffs, I don't even have. They're going to be lucky to finish 500. That's the way I feel about the Royals. And yes, I'm upset. You know this. Go ahead.
You know, I mean, look at it. How they built that team. obviously it's a lot of their homegrown players, but then they use their homegrown players to go get a guy like Shields that they can never get on the free agent market because they don't spend money.
Right. And then when you win an American League championship and you have that deep run that manifests in a World Series and you know that fans are going to be coming next year and you can kind of you can project what your payroll is based on your projected attendance and you know it's going to be higher even if it's 12% higher, they take that rounded number and put it right back in their pocket. You know what? Shame on Kansas City. It's a shame that their fans are going to have to wait another 25 years for the playoffs. It's a shame.
Oh, yeah.
It's a shame. Anyway, Bo, all right, I'm done. I'm done on the Kansas City. I'm done on
that
the Kansas
City. That was a good little rant, man.
It was.
Okay. That was almost Bo rant level. That was close.
It was beyond Bo. That's the whole thing. You know how much I love Major League Baseball, and it's a shame. I wish there was a relegation. Okay, you know like how they do in English soccer where there's a relegation where you have 30 team table and like the bottom 3, you know, end up if you don't finish above a certain level you get relegated to the next level down, right? So that would be AAA. And then it would be awesome if the Iowa Cubs can come back can come into Major League Baseball for like a season, you know what I mean? Like, because they win the PCL or something like that. That would be awesome. Can you imagine like a PCL if it's like the Round Rock Express and the Texas Rangers in the same division, or you know the American League West that has the Round Rock Express in it, that'd be kind of cool. I'm just saying that would be kind of wicked. Anyway,
I know that the city of Austin would love that.
Or like the Tacoma Rainiers and the Seattle Mariners in the same division because of relegation. That'd be awesome. So that would be awesome. But anyway, I digress. Bo, the two big headlines this week. Coming out of Major League Baseball. Number one, the Chris Bryant situation. He expressed his displeasure about not making the team, and you know how I feel about this. I mean, you're not even a major leaguer. As of right now, he's still a minor leaguer, and the collective bargaining agreement, the Major League Baseball collective bargaining agreement, has nothing to do with minor league players. He had absolutely no right to even voice his displeasure because, well, quite frankly, yeah, you might felt like you had a you might. Have felt like you earned an opportunity, but guess what? They have control over you for the first 3 years, and you know what? It's 9 games versus an entire season at the back end, which would be 2021. The Cubs were had all the right in the world to do what they did, and you know what? They did it, and they didn't look back. They didn't care what Scott Boras had to say. They didn't even care what Chris Bryant had to say, but you know what? If you're Chris Bryant, you better watch your mouth, because you know what? Within 3 weeks, you're going to be in that clubhouse, and if you're going to sit there and voice your displeasure, You're going to be walking into a hornet's nest, because you know what? Those players in that Cubs clubhouse are really not going to appreciate the fact that you ran your mouth.
No, they're not. And what is going on with young players today? This is what boggles my mind. Players get upset about their assignments all through baseball. That happens. The entire history of baseball, players get upset when they get assigned to single-A ball when they feel like this should be a double-A and vice versa, or double-A instead of triple-A, triple-A instead of the major leagues. But now you've got young players who, instead of taking that chip on their shoulder, going down to triple-A and showing the team that they did deserve to be on the team, what do? They whine to it in the press. They make it public. This never used to be public.
Right.
And he's got his agent who should know better. Then you get Scott Boras. He's got his agent shilling for him.
All Scott Boras cares about is getting 1 year closer to negotiating his arbitration, which means more money for him, and getting him one more step closer to free agency, which means more money for him. The only thing this has to do is money, Bo. That is what this comes down to.
Money.
And you know what?
Sure.
That's fine. You can voice your displeasure, but guess what? The Cubs have every right to do it. I don't care how good you were in spring training, because you know what? Maybe you're not going to be that good in the regular season. We'll find out. We'll find out when he comes up in 3 weeks. But you know what, Bo? I got to be honest with you. If you're Chris Bryant, you're towing a fine line by opening your mouth. If I were him, I would have reported to the Iowa Cubs. And if any reporter has anything to say, you just say, you know what? You know, the Cubs made their decision, and I'm just going to Iowa, and that's it. When they call me up is when they call me up. That's all I would have said. I would have let my agent done all the talking. If I was Chris Bryant, I would have kept my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
He backpedaled in his interview. He backpedaled, and I'm like, dude, you know what? There's an old saying that we have around the Silver household. You know what that is, Bo? Stand by your dump. You know what I mean? Stand by your dump. If you're going to sit there and say that you're disappointed in the Cubs' decision, stand by it and don't backpedal and say, well, it's going to be great playing for a great organization like the Cubs. Shut up. Stand by your dump. voice your displeasure and ride that all the way to Iowa. And when you come up with that chip on your shoulder and then take it out, I guess you can take it out in the vacant outfield stands of what it's going to be like to hit in Wrigley Field during their little remodel. But stand by your dump. Stand by that dump. You made your comment. Stand by it. Don't be a weenie. Stand by your dump.
You don't make this stuff public.
Right.
You do not. I have no problem whatsoever with him being upset. Because let's be honest, the only reason why the Cubs are putting him in Iowa is so they can get that extra year of control.
And I
understand that.
It happens every year with every single team that has that hot prospect, of course.
Right.
Of course. But you know what, though? It means if you have one more year of eligibility with that player, you're going to take that extra year. And it means 9 days. It's 9 days this year versus a full year on the back end. Because really, in the first 12 games, the Cubs are probably playing nine. They're only playing nine. So is it worth it to use those nine games, or is it worth it to get a full year of eligibility closer to his free agency? Of course you're going to take that extra year, and you're not going to rush the gun. Now, don't get me wrong. He probably deserved to be on the team, but guess what? The Cubs can do what Theo Epstein and company have whatever they have – carte blanche of whatever they want to do within the first 3 years before he hits arbitration.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
It is what it is. I mean, yeah. He's not a right upset, but the Cubs are just taking advantage of a system that frankly does need to be addressed. You know, I don't think it does.
I don't think
there are ways to prevent this. There are ways to prevent this. Okay. But at the same time, I don't care how angry you are, voice your displeasure privately. Do it to league to team officials. Do it to the manager.
Don't even do that because you know what, you're basically coming off as a crybaby. If you're going to voice if you're going to voice your displeasure, do it to the person that represents you, the person that's supposed to be the voice for you. Let your agent do the talking because he's the one who doesn't care about his reputation anyways because he's the one that deals with the media.
Well, I'll give you that.
Right. Let him
give you that. Which originally that's what their plan was, and then he popped off. Don't do that.
You know,
don't do that. You don't make it public.
The other headline working around baseball, Bo, is Josh Hamilton. And, of course, an independent arbitrator ruled in favor of Hamilton. I have no idea why. Last time I checked, doing blow in the offseason and getting popped on that test for doing blow certainly, at least I would think, violates every single drug test known to man. Unless you know, they're not as strict as what drug tests used to be. Apparently this independent arbitrator ruled that it did not violate the joint drug testing program of Major League Baseball. Again, I have no idea how that happened, but apparently they said that it didn't violate what his agreement was prior, because obviously Josh Hamilton was on some type of probationary thing when he was reinstated. So, you know, a couple years ago when he was with the Rangers, he violated it by drinking. Okay, that's fine. And they didn't do much about that at that point. But this is cocaine use.
Yeah.
And apparently this is much to do about nothing, whereas drinking is actually more to do about nothing. I don't get it, considering cocaine was his big bugaboo, which led him to his ouster of baseball back in the day. So apparently Josh Hamilton will not be suspended. And, of course, the Angels, of course, as classy as they are, had something to say about this. Now, of course, they're on the hook for his entire salary, whereas he would be suspended. They would not be on the hook about this. And, of course, they come out and pop off in the mouth and say exactly what they said. Bo, this is absolutely embarrassing. If you're the Anaheim Angels, this is the most embarrassing thing you possibly could say. Wait, by the way, way to throw a member of your organization under the bus.
They didn't just throw him under the bus, Steve. They crashed the bus with him still underneath it, and it exploded.
Right.
I mean, I've never seen this. Honestly, and this keeps happening. I keep saying I've never seen this. I've never seen a team completely just disavow a guy that they still owe $80 million to over 3 years.
Okay, so listen, Major League Baseball is not happy because they feel that he was indeed in violation.
Right. The Angels aren't happy because they have to pay him.
Okay, so here it is right here. The outside arbitrator ruled that Hamilton's conduct did not violate his treatment program, and thus Major League cannot suspend it as a player. The league's office said the commissioner said it disagreed with the decision and will seek to address deficiencies in the manner in which drugs of abuse are addressed under the Joint Drug Prevention. That they didn't say. Let's see. Okay, yeah, so here it is. The Angels have serious concerns about Josh's conduct, health, and behavior. We are disappointed that he has broken the important commitment which he made to himself, his family, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing. We all know that Josh Hamilton's – this is a situation that is – this is not funny toward Josh Hamilton's relapse or his recovery, because that is separate. But unfortunately, this is a matter that's actually kind of funny towards Major League Baseball, because both ends, the Angels and Major League Baseball, are upset about this, because obviously there was a violation of the joint drug treatment and prevention program. And I find this insulting towards the Joint Drug Prevention and Treatment Program that an independent arbitrator would rule in favor that he didn't violate it when he clearly admitted the violation.
Right.
And this is basically a slap in the face of what Major League Baseball has dumped millions of dollars in to make it the strongest, you know, joint drug prevention as far as PED uses and also illicit street drugs. I think this, what this basically does is, I hate to say it, I would think that this is a way that players can find a loophole in the program where they can still have their cake and eat to either, you know, admit use and still be able to get paid. This is, I guess you can say this is maybe good for Josh Hamilton because he still gets paid, but it's also bad for, I don't know what to classify this as, Bo, because again, this is such an ugly situation here.
It is.
On one end, you have a dude who admitted use of cocaine and he still gets paid. He won't play for a while, but if you're the Angels, this is, you should not say a thing.
No, you shouldn't.
A thing. You knew exactly what you got into when you signed him. You offered him 125 over five and allowed him to come in with his baggage and still did not do the things that the Rangers were able to do, which is keep him away from himself.
Yeah.
This happened on their watch. And this is the way that you're going to try to soft pedal it by saying that, yes, of course, we feel concern for him, but in the same breath sit there and say, well, you know, we're upset because we have to pay him. Like we didn't understand that this was your entire offseason. You were banking on the fact that you weren't going to have to pay him. And now you have to pay him. And now all of a sudden you're mad. Talk about hypocritical. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, it's incredibly hypocritical. And I guess the one thing about this that, and you know, I'm trying to find a silver lining here.
You're not going to find
it. The Angels are not getting off easy because Hamilton screwed up. They're actually still having to pay him. You see what I'm saying? They would have essentially been, what? They would have had to pay, what, like a year's salary if they had spent it for a year or whatever. The Angels are still on the hook. You know, they're still on the hook for the mistake that they made. Not in signing Josh Hamilton. I'm not saying that was a mistake. But not providing the support system that he needed.
This gets back to the whole root of the cause, where if you were Josh Hamilton, you would probably tell your agent to go bleep himself. Because, listen, you knew exactly what you had in Texas, and all you needed to do was walk up into Ron Washington's office, into John Daniels' office, and just say you're sorry, and understand that this is the best possible place for you. I'm not saying take less money. Nobody in the right mind would take less money. But you know what, though? The best possible situation for him was to stay in Texas, and he took the money. And it was basically, it almost seemed to me like this was, well, we'll worry about that when we approach it. We'll cross that bridge when we get there, but here's $125 million, so go to Southern California. And you know what? I think that was very short-sighted of his agent and his representation. I think it was very short-sighted on Josh Hamilton himself, thinking that he was going to be able to handle this situation when really he couldn't, and now he knows that he can't, and yet here we are.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are, and it's a bad situation. I feel bad. I feel bad for Josh, but then again, I mean, he did exactly what he did to himself. But I just don't get it, man. I don't get it.
I don't get it. I don't get the Angels coming out. I mean, what do you have? You have a general manager that says he absolutely disagrees with it. You got a president that said it defies logic, which I agree with and you agree with. But that's not something that a team front office should say publicly. They're essentially saying, yeah, Josh Hamilton kind of screwed up, and we're stuck with him. Yeah, you are. So maybe, just maybe, reach out to the kid, give him the support system he needs, get him back in the fold, and see if he's still got something left. But they're going for more divide. I mean, it's like, you know, not having a locker for him in training camp.
Right.
Having a locker in Anaheim at right. Anaheim Stadium. You know, it's like they're essentially saying, we don't want you here. But I think it probably goes to the root of it, because they probably were trying to plan a way to void that contract if baseball had done a significant suspension. Now they really are stuck with each other when they were planning on other things. Wouldn't surprise me.
The only good thing is that the Angel, most of his teammates are supporting him, whereas
right.
the rest of the front office are trying to kick him to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I can't really think of a time where, you know, a player was ousted like this from his own team. Not even the Yankees did this with A-Rod, and A-Rod was A-Rod tried to sue them.
Yeah.
A-Rod tried to sue them,
mm-hmm.
and even then, the Yankees had the wherewithal to say, you know what, this could potentially get bad. A-Rod do what A-Rod's doing, and when we have to do the public thing, we're going to embrace A-Rod from top to bottom, even though that we don't want to embrace A-Rod. Yeah, okay, that's that. The Angels, it's a defaction. I guess this should show everybody just how screwed up the Angels are. For a lot of people want to give Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, a lot of credit for spending the money and all that good stuff. Okay, that's great. But it shows you the detachment between, like, it's a separation of church and state. And I don't like to use that term, but it's almost the same thing. It's like you have on one side, you have the players who are solid amongst their players, and they understand that Josh is screwed up. They get that. They understand mm-hmm. that Josh has his issues and has his demons, but yet they're embracing him as a person, as a man, and trying to make sure that he's okay. And on the other side, you have the front office that is basically has already said, you know what, we are going to give you $80 million to stay the F away.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want you anywhere near it. Not only that, you don't even have your locker, homie. So here's your straight cash and just kick
rocks. I mean, I think what it does.
That's a bad organization.
I think what it does speak to the character of that organization a lot. I mean, it shows. I'm not totally sure what it shows, Steve. Is it all about money for them? Is it all about winning for them? Or
nobody's excusing what Josh did. Nobody's excusing it.
No one is.
But at the end of the day, though, this is a member of your family. This is a member of your organization that you invested. You went out and invested. And you know what? Don't sit there and kick him to the curb because he did this when you should have made sure that he was out of his own way to begin with. Like, if anything, this is on the Angels. Don't get me wrong. It's on Josh. Josh is the one that did
sure.
it. But this is also on the Angels. This is also on the Angels because they didn't do their homework enough. They saw the power. They thought this is exactly what this is going to fit next, you know, next to Pujols. And it didn't work out. Now all of a sudden you want to sit there and blame Josh when you actually should take some responsibility for this. Shame on the Angels. Shame on the Angels, Bo.
Absolutely. I agree with you, you know, and you know, I think that what's bad is, you know, experiencing what Josh went through from a Rangers fan standpoint. The second I found out that he wasn't going to be in camp, that he was going to be staying with a friend in Houston, that kind of ticked me off that something's wrong.
Right.
Because there's no reason for that. Yeah, he's hurt. He's still – Hugh Darvish had Tommy John surgery. He was in camp throwing left-handed the next day.
Right.
You know
right.
what I mean? I mean, that's how you treat your players. And the Angels dropped the ball on this one. It's absolutely 100% Josh's fault. He's a grown man that shouldn't need a babysitter, but he does need a babysitter.
Absolutely.
And the team didn't provide that.
Absolutely. But you know what? You know what we provided today, Bo? Solid baseball analysis. Next week we should be back. Actually, as a matter of fact, next week we won't be back. Of course, the Silver family will be in Oregon next week. 2 weeks from today, we will be back better than ever as we recap the first week and a half of Major League Baseball. And, of course, we're going to do the quintessential baseball thing. We're going to start talking wild card. No, we're not going to do. We're not going to talk about
in April.
In 2 weeks, we will talk about the first week and give our impressions of teams.
Let's talk wild cards in April. It's fun.
Until that point, that should be fun. Until that point, Bo, same bat time, same bat channel. So, Bo, take us out, my friend.
Two more sleeps, and then there's baseball.
Yep. Go Mariners.
Go Rangers.
Have a great weekend, everybody.